This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Rachel Haywire. We're going to be discussing our neurodiversity and a number of other topics. Rachel, great to have you back on the show.
Hey, always good to be back.
So the last time we talked, you were running for president under the Transhumanist Party, and they had their election, the primary ballot. How did that go, and what is the current status of your campaign?
I'm running as an independent now because there are corrupt people in the Transhumanist Party that were taking money from Epstein, and I exposed them, and they were not happy, so too bad for them, you know? Now I'm running as an independent. I have a lot more freedom this way. I don't need to talk about immortality and longevity. That was actually like one of the rules in running as a transhumanist. You had to make that a part of your party line. I was just into saying my own thing. I'm not like an anti, you know, longevity person, but like, I don't think you should be forced to talk about anything in your platform. You know, I don't like that. So now I just talk about what I want to.
And what's going to be the focus of your current campaign? Are you focusing on this? Is it the same platform, or you have some new issues that you're bringing up?
I'm adding some new issues. I have a lot of the same ones. I'm revising a few. We still have a major focus on neurodiversity, which is what this show is about. The funding of the transgressive arts, the UBI for taking money out of these drug wars and these prison sentences for sex workers and the overseas meddling. I mean, we're still there, we're still going, but we don't have to be stuck in this kind of like transhumanist PR. And it's so ironic because the people who are so obsessed with the PR are the most corrupt ones. And we find out that these PR are like pretend liberals, you know, these transhumanist neoliberals are Epstein involved. Well, no wonder they're so into PR. That all makes sense.
Is there an article that talks about Epstein's connections to transhumanism and all these issues?
Oh, yeah, they're all over. I was cited in one of them. It's in the Telegraph.
There was one in New York Times, but it was a little bit vague.
No, if you Google Epstein transhumanism, I outed Humanity Plus, the organization that took $100K from him, and I have no regrets. And it got a lot of people mad, but I do not care because I'm not going to stand for that kind of behavior. You know, in a community that I'm building for free thinkers and artists and neurodiverse people outside the political binary, we don't need their corruption coming in and polluting us. Screw that. I'm running as an independent now. Haywire 2020. Don't join the Transhumanist Party. Do join my campaign.
Completely unaffiliated.
Yeah. I like running as an independent because I have the opportunity to do pretty much whatever I want, and I'm not bounded to a certain label, a certain set of laws that I need to abide to. It's the true anarchy. You know, I once said that running for president was like the most anarchist thing you could do. Run as an independent, you know. I would love to see more independent candidates. But you know, I see some independent types that are running in the establishment, and I respect what a lot of them are doing too. You know, like who knows? I mean, if the circumstances were right, maybe I would run as something. So, I mean, it all depends on the political playing field, but I'm very happy as an independent right now.
Is there a difficult process of getting qualified as a candidate, or are you just running as a write-in?
I'm running as a write-in now, and it definitely has not been a difficult process. I know that after a certain amount of, I guess, campaign funds, you know, being raised, you have to report them, you know, to the election board and all that stuff. And I'm just beginning, you know, so I'm super, super like independent grassroots DIY candidate. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes. I don't have the support of established media outlets or, you know, like the transhumanist gatekeepers, but I have my own network of supportive people. It's growing, and I think that's the way to do it, is to just like build up your own network, to build up your own following, and not have to worry about other people's, you know, like how they think you should be, what their narrative is, what their PR message is, because it's almost always covering up some kind of corruption anyway.
With the election and the whole issue of the UBI, as a lot of people who are supporting Andrew Yang, you probably won't get the nomination, and they'll be disappointed. So there's opportunity to reach out to gang supporters, because that's a crucial issue in your campaign, and your basic income proposal would be $2,000 a month.
Yeah, I mean, it's all part of the same thing, and there's going to be a big Andrew Yang party here in the Bay Area in about a month, and, you know, like we're all kind of doing this together at this point. You see independent-minded people, you know, coming together and running on their own terms, and I think that people like Yang and Tulsi have brought out a more independent kind of voter that we didn't have before, and if anything, it has made democracy more exciting, despite us knowing how corrupt it is, us knowing like how much of a complete circus it is. Having people like Yang and Tulsi in the ring, it inspires people like me to come in, you know, and the people that come after me. And I'm looking that whole vibe right now, because I never, even though this is like what would be seen as like a underground fringe politics by many, we're still participating in the political discourse, and I never would have really even seen something like that as possible even a few years ago, you know?
With neurodiversity, you were mentioning that one of the issues that you broke ways with the left, or at least the general left as it exists today, was some of the neurodiversity sentiments, and can you give some specific examples of that?
Yeah, so there were a lot of leftist guardianista types who were calling anything that they found to be remotely uncomfortable or toxic or problematic as, you know, autistic. And they were calling out people for their autistic behavior on Twitter, like, really early. And they were saying, well, these autistic bros have no empathy. And,
but I noticed they'll say that. Like, so people like Elizabeth Warren supporters will say that about Bernie bros. Or they'll say Bernie supporters are all incels and stuff like that.
And it's not working, because, I mean, it's obvious to see this from a leftist, or from even a post-leftist, or even like a new rightist point of view. This is a classist insult. This Warren thing against Bernie, it's a classist insult. And I think if you can't see that, you deserve what you get. Because, I mean, to everybody else, it's obvious.
And a lot of it's this obsession about image control.
Yeah, exactly. Image control. It's PR. It's optics. There's nothing real behind it, and it's completely artificial, it's arbitrary, and people know they're playing these games, and they just keep feeding it, I'm not, maybe it's because I'm neurodiverse, but I'm not going to be feeding that.
And you were saying that wealthy celebrities often involved in social causes will complain about how offensive and weird autistic people are. Was on Twitter, but can you explain what the context of that comment was?
Yeah, what I remember specifically as the last example was Richard Stallman had made some off-color comment that people Richard Stallman, he's basically the inventor of open source free software. You know, like, he invented hacking in the Bay Area. Like, free software was his idea. But he'd made, like, some dumb autistic comment on Twitter. It was obviously harmless, but I don't even remember the exact context, but people just flipped out.
So wasn't something offensive, like, about race or gender or sex? Was just something kind of weird?
I mean, it was so minor to me. Like, it really seemed like some militarist crap that I couldn't understand why anybody would really have an interest in, but there were, like, all these blue checks, you know, like, mobbing him, and then it was, like, really sad. I think, like, he was, like, homeless for a few minutes. Richard Stallman, the inventor of free software, and there was, like, this one, like, celebrity blue check, and she was like, well, this is going to be a really good lesson for him. I mean, that's just sick classism. That's sick classism. These people are sick.
Why do you think people who claim to support social justice often use weird as an insult, almost as if they're against neurodiversity?
Yeah, they do use the word weird because they are actually very conservative and artistic kind of sense. They are very easy to shock. They think that they are providing some kind of moral framework by establishing a norm and signaling out people that are neurodiverse and a little weird and a little out there as, like, some kind of scapegoat, you know? And it's all just what they're afraid of being. And it's a way to dismiss somebody because they make you uncomfortable. It's a derogatory term. It is a spiritually corrupt term, and it's a neurologically deceptive term, in the way that they are weird to people that are observing them and the way that they behave. So they're kind of writing the rules for like this new normal that nobody actually subscribes to. They're appointing themselves as the guardian psychiatrists of journalism. And I am really just intolerant of them. And if any of them decide that they want to call me weird for my opinion, like I have no problem going that little SJW route right now. And I'm gonna be like, pro weird bitches, you know, fuck it.
Yeah, troll them, but basically troll them as SJWs.
Yeah, that's what I was doing.
From a woke standpoint.
Yeah, they said, well, I didn't like that weird thing you said because it sounded like some white chauvinism. And all I responded was, what's wrong with being weird? And then I put a pro weird hashtag. It said weird pride. And I had no idea what they meant about the white chauvinism. But I was just like, why are you calling me weird as an insult? Take a look at that right there. You know, so I like re-shamed them. And I mean, maybe that's like going to their level. But it was like they even realized what they had done. And this is interesting is that if you shame social justice warriors, like a lot of them, they actually do look at their behavior. And I actually like to give this person credit. I do think that she or her or them or zer or whatever their gender is.
People who are hyper-moralistic can be easy to manipulate.
Sure, sure, and they are, but I do think there was like a genuine morality. Like this was somebody who actually thought they were like doing good by attacking me for being weird, for saying what they saw as inappropriate, but I actually think that they considered, you know, maybe it's not very nice to call people weird. Maybe that is kind of like colonialist. You know, maybe I've become the conservative here. What have I become? You know, maybe I'm not gonna call anybody weird again. I really do think there was like that kind of thing with this person. Which is interesting in itself because it leads me to believe that these are not people that are trying to be malicious. They're just naive idiots.
What issues as far as neurodiversity go are you putting forth in your campaign? What would you like to see changed in public policy and as far as the culture goes as well, as far as neurodiversity goes in your platform?
Definitely the funding of the transgressive arts to get the creative classes up to a new level of production where the most out there and expressive ideas are highlighted on a social, on a physical level where we are not like celebrating, you know, strangeness in like some SJW way, but like delving in to our inner primal core and kind of like enacting this vitalist bohemian expression of the self in a way that isn't concerned with like mental health norms, but that is still elegant and that is still thriving.
There is a faction of the left that kind of fetishize being weird just for the sake of being weird, but it's kind of, they're not doing it in a constructive way, like creating cultural innovation.
I don't think those people are weird. There's nothing weird about, what is it? Normies pretending to be weird.
Yeah, that's weird. What it is, or normies.
They're not weird.
Yeah.
She's like, hi, I'm weird because I like Harry Potter and I have some rainbow bright socks and I go to my meetup where I know you're not fucking weird. You know, there's nothing weird about you. You are as normal as it comes. But thanks for the support. You know, it's like some white girl trying to be black or something. Like,
yeah.
So my guy, like, that's cool. You're down with the weird. We love you. We love you. You know,
Yeah, that's the big thing is funding the arts, funding the transgressive arts, and just funding the arts in general, because people who have talents, they should be given a path forward, and even if someone's not entirely talented, even if they're mediocre, they should. I mean, I'm not even opposed to funding those people as well, but I think it's the most important thing is for the people who are talented to have a chance to really succeed, and I do notice this trend a lot, is a lot of people who society as it is now is not giving them a path forward, so then they end up becoming really alienated and bitter and resentful because they're not being given an opportunity to thrive.
Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, like, all the Hitlers and all the Jokers just trying to get by. It's really sad. We don't have a solution for it right now. I mean, we've been trying for centuries to figure out how to deal with the problem of alienation and how it relates to serial killers and insanity. You know, some people, they just channel it through their music and their art. To me, that's the best way, you know, is through the creative arts, theater.
I think it's really important to create all these new kind of expression valves, like theater. I was just talking about this on Twitter. Somebody had talked about, like, theater versus cinema. And we don't really have, like, an alternative counterculture theater scene. But if we did, there really could be, like, some interesting, like, creative, you know, like, rising class energy channeled out of this theater scene. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it would be interesting how would it be implemented. So there's the funding. Would it just be kind of like a basic income for the arts? So if you're an artist or blogger or writer, you get like $1,000, $2,000 a month. Or would it be more complex programs that you would set up, like a local theater, but more open, more like open to the transgressive arts? And same with, like, filmmakers. Like, how would this exactly work, this program for funding the arts?
We'd have artists and musicians and writers and filmmakers, even photographers. I mean, even performance artists. We don't want to put a cap on, like, what it means to be an artist, as long as you're not being some idiotic troll. If you're doing something creative and expressive, you'd be able to apply for a grant to get your project funded. You would describe what your project was about, what your intention was, what you needed for it, and then you would list the budget, what it would cost, and you would get your project funded. Much like people get projects funded now, but we would have a specific transgressive arts funding initiative where we had money reallocated to fund these creators.
And what are some of the benefits to society of funding the arts? We would see, like, a cultural renaissance. Like, what trends do you see?
Yeah, I mean, that is obviously the goal. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight. I think that the utilitarian society that we have now, its spiritual current is definitely wrong. I think that people have had enough of it. It's already on its last legs. And we might not be aware of that right now as consumers, you know, because it seems like everybody's still propping it up. But with the right funding and with the right growth, the transgressive artist community would thrive in such an extreme way that these people that seem like they have so much gatekeeping power now would just look like ants to us. I mean, we don't have the transgressive arts fund. So how do we know what that would be? I mean, artists aren't even getting funded in America to do this kind of thing now, except on really underground levels, and maybe a few people that have, like, high up private investors. But if you look at the Miami show, you know, with the banana that the guy peeled off at the wall,
yeah.
that was, like, supposed to be ironic. Like, it was supposed to be some clever critique, but it was just, like, as bad.
There's, like, this small niche of artists who do have access to wealthy investors, but for most people who are talented, it's very difficult.
We haven't even begun. I've been to some great galleries, but they don't have a lot of interactivity to them. Burning Man is fantastic in many ways, but it's still very hippie. It's still very politically left-leaning in ways that might be censorious, according to some people. I think what we need, I've said this before, we need, like, a darker Burning Man. And I think that we can fund this in a way that is going to create a spiritual renaissance that does occur. I mean, it happens in Italian, you know, like, futurists. It happens in the French revolutions. It happens in the Italian Renaissance. It happens in the Berlin, the Weimar, the Cabaret era. There are new bursts of creative growth that build and completely change the society.
And it's also important to create more economic niches, especially in regards to neurodiversity. People who have talents, it could be in the arts. It could also be in technology.
Yes, very much. There are a lot of people that are making interesting kind of fractal art. They are DJing with algorithms now. They're making virtual reality experiences that really push the limits of what it means to be alive right now. And they're breaking down a lot of taboos in these very high-tech worlds that some consumers might not be aware of. VR is a huge frontier now. And we get to decide if we make that a beautiful world to explore in which we can indulge, or if that's just another plastic utopian fantasy, if we're really going to go for an exploration of the soul, or if we're just going to make it another plastic utility, and VR is available to us, and VR is only beginning. And I know that a lot of people listening to this, they might think that is overly optimistic. But if you think about the power that people have had in media, you know, like in finance, the people they've had in entertainment, right? In terms of gatekeeping and nepotism, there's no reason that we can't start using VR now, as like underground, pioneer artists, right? Even if we're like down in the dumps and screwed, right? Because we can work on that. Like at this very moment, nobody owns virtual reality. It's a completely new world available to us.
Well, that's something that's really going to take off in like the next few decades, the current decade probably.
I think it's going to be exciting because a lot of people, they're just really bored with the current internet. I don't blame them. I feel like people are leaving social media. Like everybody's on Discord, you know, and like Telegram now. It seems like that there's not really the community that we had online as much anymore. But I think that VR is going to make that a lot more exciting. And I think that maybe like rather than like rejecting, you know, technological progress because we like associate it with some notion of decline, we should take it into our own hands, you know, and just play with it in a way that's beneficial to us. Like, I hate the barriers that a lot of people on the more romantic right put on technology. Even though I completely understand where they're coming from, I just find it a bit limiting in terms of scope, you know, if that makes sense to you.
Oh, yeah, the dissident right has a very bleak view of technology. You don't have a totally dystopian view about technology. You see a lot of benefits to empowering people.
I think that we should use it in ways that are beneficial to us. I understand that it's being used in a lot of ways that are extremely evil because I've had the misfortune of dealing with people that have used technology for those ways.
Or all this new surveillance technology, this new facial recognition technology, which we'll probably see in the United States pretty soon.
It's really creepy. I think it all comes from like Chinese technology, social credit, authoritarian kind of brainwashing. And I think we should be really wary about doing trade with China. A lot of tech companies, they don't care about our personal liberty. They don't care about the surveillance state as long as they're getting the cheapest goods. And if the tech industry, even 10 years ago, would have put some kind of barrier on doing trade with China, I don't think we'd be in the surveillance mess that we are now, because they've been developing these technologies for so long. This is how they run their country. And I would like to see more people going against that. I really feel like it's become an increasing threat. I mean, I read this article. It was very scary to me personally. Because I have kind of a controversial internet persona, and it said that if you wanted to get an Airbnb, that they could now look up your social media persona and check you for traits of all sorts of, like narcissism, Machiavellianism, psychopathy. This is anti-neurodiversity, right? They're trying to weed people out. And then they said, like your trust score would be low and that you would have a low trust score. So people wouldn't want to rent to you. So that means that like all the creative transgressive artists wouldn't be able to get Airbnbs if they weren't positive enough. I mean, that's fucking horrible. Like, how is that okay with anybody? How is anybody okay with that? That's like, they're literally killing off the human spirit and they're saying that they're trying to help us while they're doing it. It's so sick.
They'll probably have some software that traces people's online activity to create a complete psychological profile. And then maybe create some kind of social credit score based on that psychological profile.
Yeah, that's what they're doing now. They actually are doing it. They're currently doing that. So I guess everybody's going to like have to create new identities. But I mean, that's what that's going to happen. You're just going to have new people with new identities. There's going to be like a million avatars and like sock puppet accounts and like fake IDs. And it's really weird because like I consider myself like overall I'm a pretty non-threatening kind person, but it's kind of strange when like half the people I know online are afraid to use their real names. I mean, like if somebody just like an alien came in from another planet and like examined that, like isn't there just something really wrong with this?
That is kind of the whole thing with deplatforming is deplatforming. A lot of this is about tone policing.
Yeah, and tone policing is also classist because they're okay with certain things being said as long as they're said elegantly. I see it more and more, and people on the left, like Amy Therese, have been calling it out. And it's really nice to see this anti-PC left emerging. I really liked Amy Therese.
Oh, she was suspended. I think she was reinstated.
I'm so sad. Oh, shit. Was she finally reinstated?
Yeah, let me just double check. I think she was.
I was so sad when I heard about that. It was
she's really, I see her right now on Twitter. Me.
Is she back?
Yeah.
Yay! Free Amy. Amy has been free. No, she's still suspended. She just has another account.
Oh, it's a new account. That's right.
No, we should, I would totally get a free Amy shirt. But I was just happy to see that kind of thing coming from the left, because I thought if you talked about that kind of thing, you kind of like had to be like on the right. So I actually think there's potential for the left now. And, you know, like people like her are kind of leading a charge. And it's such a bummer that they're the ones getting suspended. You know, it's like the left finally starts to gain a pulse and now their accounts are getting banned, right?
And she has a pretty big following. There was like an anti-PC left. If you go to like the blogger Robert Lindsay, but he kind of was sort of part of like more like the dissident sphere. Yeah, he was kind of isolated from the rest of the left. But you actually have this, the anti-PC left has become like a real thing just because the wokeness has become so insane. So Amy Therese is probably the most significant person. Michael Tracy, too.
Well, I mean, everybody knows the Red Scare podcast now. They've become like in Chapo Trap House. So, and I'm glad because I didn't like Chapo. And I had a lot of like labor leftist friends and they were like, Chapo Trap House is great. It's like the real left. I'm like, this is retarded. This is like dumb irony bro crap. And I felt the same way about like the majority of the podcast, but for Red Scare, it has a lot of potential. It's a little catty for me. And sometimes I don't understand like half the things that they're talking about with like celebrities, but when they're talking about politics and when they're talking about neoliberalism and they're talking about why people do the things they do, these girls are brilliant. It's really refreshing to just have people like Anna and Dasha like representing this new kind of anti-PC left current. I never would have expected that. It's an interesting time. At the same time, though, like we can't forget that they'll never have to take the risks, you know, like the people on the dissident right with like leftist economic views took. And so they think that they're like being attacked for the first time when they don't know about like all of the economic leftists on the dissident right that took shit way before then. But they're still taking so much shit. It's like it blows my mind sometimes because, I mean, it's just like people living their lives, right? Like, what is this except for people living their lives?
What are your thoughts on neurodiversity and dissident politics, the role it plays, including the dissident right?
Well, I think that there are different factions of the right, and there's definitely a very anti-neurodiversity current on the right, just like there is on the left, but there's also a very pro-neurodiversity current on the right.
Well, it's almost like a stereotype that alt-rightists are autistic.
Maybe, but I mean, they're always calling each other autistic.
Well, I don't know if it's sometimes, it's hard to say sometimes it's an insult, but sometimes they call themselves like Spurs in an ironic sense.
I'm down for an Aspie Master Race, like as the token semi-hot chick. If we can build it, let's do it. You know, like I'm down for it. I'm down for it. It's very hard to navigate with neurotypicals. And you know what? It's probably true. Like the more that I think about this, probably like half the right are just people that couldn't deal with neurotypicals. You know, maybe they didn't have any better options. Maybe that's the reason that all this shit is happening. When if they would have had like better alternatives, they never would have like become consumed by hate or whatever. I don't know. I'm just
one criticism I do have of the dissident right is a lot of those people, they're people who are outsiders or even neurodiverse. I don't really get why they're so obsessed with defending like the normative values.
Yeah, I'm fully on the same page with you here. And I think that these are the questions that we need to be asking. And I don't understand where they're coming from, but I think it's a lot like the nerd trying to be accepted by the jocks. And it's just kind of pathetic. You know, like you see, like an example would be somebody like they say that they're really into just like normative family values and traditionalism. And they talk about like how they hate queers and immigrants. And then you look at a picture of them And it's like, it looks like some hippie stoner Satanist. And it's like, that's cool. I'm not judging you for that. But you're obviously not a pinnacle of like traditional values, dude. You know, like you're some fucked up degenerate. Just fucking admit it. You know, like it's there's so much like moral posturing. I think I'm like a lot of people, you know, like the more neurodiverse portion of the dissident right was just like, we're degenerates. And I'm like, that's awesome. Because, you know, honesty is core. Honesty is core. I don't want to feel like I need to audition for like some conservative media television show. I just want to be myself. That's all I want to do. And I'm going to do that. So whatever like virtue signaling games these people are playing, it's just so pointless.
Do you have any observations on neurodiversity meetups? Like, would you say a lot of them are basically like SJWs in many cases?
Yeah, I mean, I went to one. It was really pathetic. They were just trying really hard to be neurotypical by, like, pretending to be activists or something like that. It was, like, a very cringe. Very cringe. I'm going to use that word because it really does apply here. But I think that can be changed. Because I think new things are happening and it's easier than ever to meet people. So you can just throw a meetup. You can just go to a place where you meet a few people, have a small gathering, you know, go to a concert. I see like more weird bands now. I want to see even more of that. And I think that there are going to be more art shows that are just on a more provocative level now. I mean, I think that the weird right and the anti-PC left should kind of just like form an alliance in the name of creation, you know, and stop worrying about like all the political binary BS, you know, and just do it like in the name of an economic kind of mobility. I really think that is so crucial right now.
And by the weird right, do you mean the distant right or more the art right that you're affiliated with?
Well, the art right, the weird right. I don't know what people mean when they say dissident right now, because some people use that to say alt-right, so maybe like the alt-center, but just people that don't fit with like the traditional left-right that are dissident creators.
So like radical center or third position?
Yeah, I mean like depending on where you're coming from, as long as you're challenging the political binary in a way that is not capitalism or communism or like normie fascism or whatever, you know, like you're on your own plane, like forget about the left, right, like just focus on the dissident act of creation and focus on the economic growth, you know?
And with neurodiversity, like people who are autistic, it's treated more as a disability or sort of a charity as opposed to actually giving them a role in society to fully utilize their talents.
Yeah, it's really patronizing, and you'd think that these people would realize not to patronize people with high IQs, but they just keep doing it. They're so stupid. How are they in power? I mean, I just, like, you talk about, like, a privilege. Like, if I was that dumb, I'd be dead on the streets, dude. Like, how can you think that condescending somebody with 140 IQ is a good idea? You know, like, what are they even thinking?
A lot of them do have high IQs. I actually blame the left because of this kind of egalitarian mindset. Basically,
right.
Anyone who's labeled a disability has to be put in one box. If we were to say people who do have higher IQs, they're more gifted, that goes against egalitarianism. So that's part of it, too.
I like that. Yeah, I think that we should factionalize the freak community because I don't feel that it's the same to say that somebody that's drooling in a wheelchair is the same as like some high IQ autistic genius that just doesn't know how to behave normally. I get wanting to put everything in one banner. It's kind of like multiculturalism in a way. It's just like an easier way to streamline things in a utilitarian function. I mean, like, I think a lot of it is mathematical. It's not even moral. You know, like the moral, I think about like multiculturalism and like one banner disability stuff. I think it's just like utility.
Or Amy Therese was saying that a lot of that stuff, like the ethnic, racial, gender identity politics of the left, it's not on the record. I mean, I'm not a Marxist, but she's coming at it from more of a traditional Marxist standpoint that it's basically it's nothing to do with real leftism, but it's a product of consumerism.
Yeah, I fully agree with her there. I mean, I think that when she started this podcast, What's Left, because she's like, where's the left? And I think that in a way, she's kind of a pioneer, because she has brought like this class left movement. But I'm very critical of it, because like we were talking about before, like that they haven't gone through the battles and that they don't really know what's going on. They're also still sponsored by like certain media tastemakers, even if not financially, like just being in with those crowds. They don't have like some scarlet letter of like alt-right on them or whatever, you know. They're still relatively well-liked. They're still like the heroes of the story. And I think, you know, and I'm not even trying to say like that that's like a bad thing, but I think that it limits their scope of ability, and they just might not be aware of like certain things that are occurring. I mean, I think a lot of people are going to get hurt and damaged, and I think it's going to be really brutal. And I don't want to be in the front of it, you know, like after like everything that I've experienced, I'm kind of just like I hope these new anti-PC leftists are going to be okay. You know, like, I just hope they're gonna be okay. Like,
no, I do think the whole anti-PC leftist thing will take off, just because the woke stuff is getting even more insane, and more people are waking up, because a lot of the whole issue of wokeness being intertwined with neoliberalism and even capitalism, that used to be a kind of a right-wing populist talking point, but now a lot of leftists are starting to wake up to that.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, I think eventually we're all going to merge. But I would be mindful of like certain tastemakers on the left still that are looking to use these people like for their own agendas, because I've seen like a lot of Trotskyist types, you know, they're very like high end, you know, and they kind of like they use the anti-PC left as like their jesters, but they're meanwhile, you know, doing very, very sinister other things. And, you know, like, you would think more people would be aware of that. Like, I'm very critical of all communities. And I remember for a while there were, like, some dissident right people that were promoting the Extinction Rebellion, because they were in that whole, like, eco-fesh vibe. And I'm like, you know, these people are just neoliberals that are co-opting some movement, right? But they seem to be, like, really excited about the Extinction Rebellion. So you know, like, I think anti-PC left is good. You know, but like, be wary of like certain forces of influencers. Like, you know, like if you've been around, you know what I'm saying, you know?
You wrote on Trigger Warning at 20 utterly milquetoast predictions for 2020. This is mostly a satire, but do you have any thoughts on predictions for trends? I did a show with Brandon Adamson on this as well for the next decade.
Yeah, I was really happy when I saw that show, and I've been meaning to check out more of his stuff. And I actually, you know, like even these, the predictions, it's satire, but I think a lot of them actually will happen. Like the one with, I really think this is the most likely to happen, and it's kind of scary, but it's number 12. A famous YouTube star will commit suicide after being chased offline for being insufficiently woke. I think that is going to happen this year. And then there's suicide. It's going to turn into a way for Turning Point to make money. They're just going to turn into like some fundraiser. You know, it's going to just be like some conservative fundraiser. And they're just going to keep showing like the YouTube star, you know, on their media, you know. And it's going to be really, really depressing, like from so many angles. But I really think this is what's going to happen. Hopefully not. But I've seen like how the conservative media like exploits these kind of things. And that's just more, what is it, like neoliberal decadence. So I kind of just want to like tune out of the whole thing. I think a female incel is kind of likely. You know, I think that there was that one, you know, but I don't know if she went on like a shooting. I think it was like a trans person on the shooter.
I don't think we've seen like an actual fem cell shooter, but there was this incident where a woman who was in cell shot herself on the news back in the 70s.
Yeah, there was that one incident. And I think there's going to be more of that now, especially with like how the gender lines are.
But there's a general perception that the incel phenomenon is exclusively male. Do you see the whole fem cell phenomenon as a thing, and do you see it as a trend?
Okay, so I was just talking to my friends about this earlier. I don't know anything about femcels. I have my own opinions on incels and like what's going on with that. But I think that there is an alienated, dejected, pissed off female class that is sort of like the female Jokers, the female Harlequins, you know, the dark goddesses, whatever. And that while they're not having a problem getting laid, they're having a problem interacting in normal society. You know, like you go to like a show and you see like a noise band of like just like really fucked up goth chicks just losing their shit, you know, and that they don't have any friends outside of that show. You know, I mean, that it's not like incel, but it's the same alienation. It's the same sense of dejection from society. So maybe it needs a new word, but I wouldn't say that it's that out of bounds to think that a really just like pissed off chick, you know, with a really angry manifesto might just like go on some rampage. I mean, we have the YouTube shooter, you know, and then the scene, you know, and I find it interesting that the shooter dynamics are breaking down with gender, like just on a cultural level. We'll see, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, it seems with those shootings, it's been every single ethnic group, every single ideology, so you can't really stereotype them or pin them on one single group.
Yeah, well, I think we can pinpoint them on the alienated.
Yeah, that's for sure.
What causes shootings?
So we were talking about neurodiversity. Yes. Do you think that the problem with mass shootings is some trend that's happened in society in regards to neurodiversity that has really pushed all these people off the edge?
I wouldn't say that neurodiverse people are more likely to be shooters, but what I would say is that the alienation that we face is greater now than it's ever been, which is why we're seeing more shootings, and that the reason for shootings, I don't believe it's guns, I don't believe it's antidepressants, I certainly don't believe it's a political ideology or a song that somebody listened to. I believe it's alienation. Alienation is the root cause of shootings. And if we can solve alienation, we can decrease the amount of shootings. That's something so few people are willing to look at because understand alienation. Yeah.
Yeah, you should really use your campaign as an opportunity to come up with solutions for this.
Yeah, I think uniting the alienated is always tricky because you always have people that snap and go psychotic and suddenly
could unite them and then one of them snaps and then those events get connected to you and you obviously don't want that to happen.
Right. Like it did a few years ago and I was like, whoa, like I'm just living my life, you know, like I don't know who all you guys are, why you think that I'm like Satan, but I'm literally just like some chick. When you hang out in like passionate crowds, especially with like freaky people, you know, like neurodiverse people, like that there are going to be more, you know, like you do have to be more careful. And, you know, it's not like when I get like a disturbing message, which I do. You know, because people, they reach out to me with that kind of stuff. Like, usually I just, you know, people are expressing themselves, but sometimes, like, it's a little disturbing. Like, I remember this one guy, he followed me on Instagram, and he had, like, pictures of, like, different shootings, you know, as, like, his videos. And then he had, like, just, like, really dumb, like, 4chan memes, and that was, like, his IG feed. And I'm just like, I hope this guy doesn't go on a spree, you know? maybe it was like a fed. I don't know. Maybe it was. I'm just gonna pretend like that was it because I don't want to think about.
We're getting close to the end of the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your campaign? And is it the same website as previously?
Yeah, HeyWire2020.com. I'm gonna be updating it this month, and it's gonna be up to go very soon. You know, just working on a few things right now. I've been focused heavily on Election Party, which is a part of the campaign. It's a card game you can get if you go to electionpartygame.com. I mean, you can actually simulate democracy. You can argue positions, run as a candidate, and you can fight off scandals. Politics are a game. We might as well all run for president.
Rachel Haywire, it's been an excellent show. Thank you so much for being on.
Thank you.